feel like we should be talking about the flavor of the month, since we just gave our flavor of our months on our microphone.
Andrea, you have the vanilla microphone.
Brian, you have lemon, mango maybe?
I'd call it a lemon mic, yes, or not quite ripe mango. And Ozzy, you have the...
Blueberry, I believe, is what this would be.
It's more purple. It's a color that does not exist in nature, except for purple loosestrife.
So we were just talking about the Ozzy's terrific profile of Paladino, which you can find on itsafreecountry.org, shameless plug, and in which the colorful language is all edited out on the radio version, I'm afraid to say.
He dropped an F-bomb in the middle of an interview with a reporter for radio that he knew was being recorded?
He did. I guess he just couldn't help being himself. He was recalling meeting Rick Lazio when Lazio had gone up to Buffalo looking for campaign money. And Carl Paladino, a self-made multimillionaire, commercial real estate developer, was one of the people that Lazio had met with. And after the meeting, Paladino says he escorted Mr. Lazio and his entourage out of the office, came back, sat down with his own team, and somebody there sort of threw up their hands and said, "What was that?" And when Paladino sort of made the gesture, he was trying to translate what the gesture meant. He said it meant what the something we can't say further. But
I believe we can say it on the internet, but you don't have to. So,
good to know.
Paladino could win, right? I mean, he could win the primary.
There is a good chance. He has a lot of money, and he is playing to this very angry base of voters who are very motivated to come out. And Lazio has strategically ignored Mr. Paladino, has refused to debate him. And the idea is to not get pulled so far to the right that he becomes, you know, just unelectable in a general election in New York State.
Who is the he, Lazio?
Lazio, correct. Mm-hmm. Where Democrats outnumber Republicans about, I think, 5-3 statewide. So what he's trying to do is ignore this person on his far right, sort of get by in the primary and then take on Andrew Cuomo and just hope that Lazio can sort of win over some of those people who were motivated by the Paladino campaign earlier.
Brian, do you have any sense from callers to your show, like how Paladino is doing?
No, I don't think I can tell from callers to my show. We haven't had many call-ins about Paladino, but, you know, this is a year where Joe Miller won in Alaska over Lisa Murkowski, wasn't supposed to win, where Rand Paul won a primary, et cetera, et cetera, where I think anything can happen. And I think Ozzy makes the salient point that those who have enthusiasm in the Republican primary, and how many people voted in a New York State Republican primary anyway? And those who are enthusiastic are probably enthusiastic for Carl Paladino because they're fed up. They're happy to take somebody who looks a little bit rough around the edges,
right,
if they've got the Tea Party true belief, if you will. And where's Lazio's base? Who is it who's going to wake up next Tuesday morning who's a registered Republican and say, "My gosh, I'm going to be late for work because I have to go"? And, well, you don't pull the lever anymore. Do whatever it is.
Well, you can touch the screen.
I'm going to fill out this ballot with a pen and insert it in a new touchscreen voting machine for Rick Lazio. Where are those people with all that enthusiasm? The one counter to that I heard.
I'll never stop being able to say pull the lever. I'm hopelessly dated
already.
Will.
We're going to have to figure out what the new catchphrase is. If it's not pull the lever, what is it? Is it mark the bubble?
The ballot, I guess.
That sounds so exciting. Mark the ballot.
But in any case, Wayne Barrett said to me the other day that what might save Lazio is that there's an interesting Republican congressional primary on the east end of Long Island.
Right.
Which was his old district. So that's where people may be going in with some enthusiasm to vote in a different race, but then they'll see good old Rick Lazio on the ballot, and right, that may save his...
That's interesting. I mean, you know, it's fascinating because once upon a time, the thing that you just said, Ozzy, about like anger being a motivator, once upon a time, was not enough of a motivator. Like, you just didn't vote for somebody because you were just angry. You usually voted for somebody, particularly in a primary. You know, if you were going to go and vote in a Republican primary, which is, you know, I mean, there's 3 million registered Republicans in New York, so it's not a tiny group. But the people who actually vote in a primary is not a lot of that voting group. But once upon a time, you used to have to like somebody. And these are such interesting times. I mean, and, you know, last year, I don't know about you, Ozzie, but I was blown away in the general election by the level of unhappiness of the voters, and particularly coming a year after the Obama-McCain election, when there was sort of a different kind of motivational force at work. Now
it was supposed to be hope, and the big motivator last year, although Bloomberg won, was people being disaffected by his extension of term limits.
Right.
That's what you were
referring
to,
and I guess
to, right?
We'll find out on Tuesday to what extent that's still going. But, I mean, all the indications are that it's, you know, still very hot, that voters are very hot,
right,
very angry, and that is the thing that is driving them to vote.
Well, in 2008, Obama was being slightly criticized for raising expectations so high and having everyone believe that things were going to change so immediately. Well, when you raise expectations high on hope in 2008, it's sort of natural that you don't come through immediately, and 2010 becomes a year of anger.
By the way, did you see, speaking of Obama, I mean, it's about the third year anniversary of the giant speech that Obama gave in Washington Square Park. Where were you there, Ozzie?
I wasn't.
It was this giant speech, and it was like, we're going to restore civil liberties, and we're going to restore habeas corpus. And I thought it was so fascinating. I was reading the court decision yesterday about the torture and whether they could dismiss these torture cases bound only on state secrecy, which the Obama administration was arguing. And it was such a disorienting moment to be reading this article about the decision in the torture case that the Obama administration had argued so strongly that this was necessary for national security. And I was so disoriented. I was like, whoa, you know, that was, I mean, I know that they've been moving in this direction, but I was thinking of that Washington Square Park speech.
Well, I think it goes to even a larger critique of the Obama administration as opposed to the Obama campaign. What happened to Yes, We Can? What happened to no red states or blue states? What happened to the new patriotism? You know, you talk about callers to the show. We were getting calls around Inauguration Day from people saying, gosh, now I have to have two jobs, my regular job and my job for the country. Because there was remember that people on the left were carrying American flags around the time of the Obama election. That whole thing has kind of disappeared. And I think it's partly his fault because he did not carry that rhetoric forward. Now, yes, he got into a lot of policies that people wanted, healthcare and financial reform, but he seemed to revert to sort of a politics as usual approach to it, even if the policies represented change. And where is this new patriotism? Where is this, you know, we're all in this together, even if you disagree with me? Something happened to the rhetoric.
Well, also, something happened to the apparatus that he had built. There were all these people who, for the first time, got engaged in politics. They got engaged nationally. And, you know, the old adage, you know, think globally, act locally. Well, after the presidential campaign, there were a lot of these people looked at each other and said, all right, what's the next campaign? There wasn't a huge rallying around a mayoral candidate in New York City by these, you know, creations or vestiges of the Obama campaign. I remember speaking to one of them, and I said, you know, your group, Brooklyn for Obama or something like that, like, what do you guys do in 2009? I never got an answer about that. And you can argue that some of the other candidates had learned there was this incredible power associating yourself with Obama. Therefore, if you do it just enough, you can sort of peel off some of that attraction.
It's fascinating that you say that because, you know, I'm just thinking about the debate that, Brian, you hosted. Ozzie, you were a questioner on Wednesday, which you can hear online if you get to hear it. And I am trying to
that
think.
That is between the five Democrats,
right,
running for state attorney general in the primary.
I'm thinking about what you're saying. And did any of them mention Obama?
Well, how about this? How many of the Democrats running in primaries coming up on Tuesday are associating themselves with Obama? How many Democrats in New York that are going to be on the ballot this November are associating themselves with Barack Obama?
What's the answer?
I know. You know what? There's not many. There's Bill Perkins, who's a state senator in Harlem, who's facing a challenge by Basil Smigley. Now, Bill Perkins was one of the first elected officials in New York to endorse Mbama.
When other New York officials, partly out of state loyalty or fear of who was powerful in the state, endorsed Hillary Clinton early on when
Bessel
she was a senator
from Hillary Clinton,
from
right?
New York.
Do I have that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Worked
yes,
for her?
Yeah. He was a pretty major part of her campaign,
right.
If I am not mistaken.
Correct.
So Perkins draws on Obama. And in that district, most of which is in Harlem, Obama is particularly popular compared to other places.
Right. And there's an interesting twist where Obama is very supportive of charter schools, whereas Bill Perkins is not.
That's
so,
what that race is largely about.
Correct.
That is, I can't sort of get over this in the Attorney General's race, because this is the, you know, sort of, if any group in the country is going to try to rally their connections to the National Democratic Party, it would be this group of Democratic Attorney General candidates. But we are not hearing it at all, even from Eric Schneiderman, who's sort of trying to kind of mobilize that group of sort of energetic young Democrats. He's, you know, trying to wrap up the African-American endorsements. So it is fascinating that you are not hearing a lot of that from his campaign.
And by the way, in the news conference that President Obama just held a short time ago as we speak, which is around 12:30 Friday afternoon, he was asked by Jake Tapper of ABC News why the only ads that Democratic congressional candidates around the country are taking out that refer to health care are from Democrats who voted against health care reform. People aren't embracing it and saying,
not
our
a vote
party
of confidence.
Finally brought universal coverage to America. Only those who voted against it, even though they're Democrats, are using it in their campaigns.
Taz Willick, who, in addition for reporting for The Takeaway, writes for Transportation Nation, wrote a story about a theory that's sort of going around Washington, no proof for it, but that Obama's Labor Day infrastructure plan was actually done as an opportunity for swing state Democrats to disagree with Obama, that he sort of did it as a, in Colorado, the Democrat Democrat U.S. Senator Bennett is already sort of saying, I'm not going to vote for any more stimulus plans. Because I was sort of figuring out, like, why did Obama do this? The stimulus was, you know, it's been so misunderstood and roundly, derided around the country. Why would he announce another stimulus as the launch of the political campaign season?
Very
is he even
careful
calling
not
it?
To use that word, by
so,
the way.
Right.
Our business editor, Charlie Herman, pointed out on my show today that in the unveiling of these plans this week, the R&D tax credit for business, this $50 billion for infrastructure and infrastructure jobs, that he never used the word stimulus.
So what do we call it?
We call it Infrastructure for America.
Road building.
So, on the Attorney General's race, any handicapping, Ozzy? Any sense from the street?
I mean, there is a very clear sense that Eric Schneiderman is the person to beat in this race. He has the New York Times endorsement, labor unions, and he's campaigning heavily on this, like, very urban agenda. He just released an ad called, you know, Buffalo Endorsements. And it's basically Buffalo, one of the largest cities in the state, is basically, if you want to think about it, an extension of New York City in terms of, you know, the issues that residents there face. And he's not really campaigning or focusing too much on all the places in between the urban cities around the state. Kathleen Rice, who is thought to have the support of Andrew Cuomo, though not officially, is a very close second, if not a co-front runner in this race. Sean Coffey, a private attorney, has enough money to be a wild card.
Although it was interesting because in the two debates this week, Eric Schneiderman definitely drew the fire. So, I mean, in a typical pattern, the one who draws the fire is the one who opponents think is winning.
Right.
And, you know, it's very hard to attack anybody in a five-way race because nobody knows where the votes are going to go.
Why is Andrew Cuomo for Kathleen Rice if he actually is?
That is a great question. One is that she's not Eric Schneiderman. I mean, Schneiderman, many people say, is the focal point of where a lot of anti-Cuomo sentiments within the Democratic Party are rallying around. People that don't like Cuomo's call to cut spending on education, on health care, and things like that can very easily find a home base in Eric Schneiderman's entourage.
In the state legislature in general, and the Democratic majorities in the state legislature in general, right? Isn't that a lot of what the David Paterson versus the legislature has been about, that the governor wants to cut more than the legislature wants to cut. The governor is looking at the big picture of the overall state budget and deficit and all of that. And each individual legislature is trying to look out for the services in their district, the schools and the hospitals, et cetera. So you get, as a result of that, you know, political formula, you get bigger spending legislators than the governor, and that's just going to repeat itself if Cuomo's elected?
There is a chance. I mean, Cuomo is kind of signaling that he wants to cut spending and bring the state's finances in line with taxpayers, not so much in line with what legislators say taxpayers want.
Well, there's another potential reason for Andrew Cuomo. So if the argument is that Andrew Cuomo is this, you know, shock and awe campaign and he has overwhelming force and he just wants to win big, which would be, you know, both argue for his agenda as governor, but also for any future political plans, U.S. president that he might have, then Kathleen Rice is somebody that he would want to be running with, presumably, because sort of demographically, you know, she's more to the center, she's a woman, you know, sort of there's more enthusiasm going into the general election. So, you know, he's been saying, I need to build this grassroots organization, this campaign, so that when we get to Albany, we can make the changes. And it's interesting because I understand that, did the Working Families Party, did they sort of work this out over Rosh Hashanah?
Not quite yet.
Because last year when we were doing Digesting Politics, we were talking about the Working Families Party as this incredible force in the Democratic primary that everybody wants to have. But I understand that he is sort of, you know, they need him, because if they don't get him, they have a problem getting on the ballot in future elections. So he's saying, you need to support my agenda, which is a tax-cutting agenda, which is not what they have stood for. But that is also sort of fits into this pattern of Cuomo wants to, you know, make something happen when he gets to Albany.
Now, this could be another side effect of this election year, depending on how things turn out. Might we actually see the sudden death of both the New York State Conservative Party and the Working Families Party, because you need to get 50,000 votes for your gubernatorial candidate in order to even remain on the ballot in New York?
It is possible. It is very possible. I mean, that's how the Liberal Party sort of went away. They did not, which was at the time, Andrew Cuomo was campaigning on their line. He pulls out of the gubernatorial race. I believe it was 2002, and the party is left in the lurch. And they decide to run ads saying just vote for the line anyway, and it didn't work. So, the fact that the Working Families Party does not have a candidate yet on the top of their ticket to draw at least 50,000 votes is a concern.
Is there a gubernatorial primary in the Conservative Party?
There is. There is an upstate county chairman who is aligned with Carl Paladino, who said he's running. There have been very few indications that it's an actual campaign, but then again, you're campaigning for far fewer voters, and the hot button issues there are
so the real risk is if Lazio gets that line, Conservative Party line, but Paladino is nominated for governor.
On the Republican line. Right. Then there's
that's
a split.
The real risk to the Conservative Party.
That's,
maybe less
talk about
of a
motivation.
Maybe
right? I mean, who's motivated to go vote for Rick Lazio on the Conservative Party line in November if he is not the candidate
against
for governor?
Against the very conservative Carl Paladino.
Right. Well, I mean, that is tough.
He does have a very difficult situation. Mm-hmm. If you acknowledge that you have an opponent, instantly you have a race, and that's the last thing you want as a front runner. You know, Michael Bloomberg did sort of a great job of sort of downplaying expectations, and this really isn't a race. And he had a lot of people thinking and kept a lot of people believing that this race was not as close as it actually ended up being. Well, if Rick Lazio acknowledges that Carl Paladino is a serious challenger and that his Conservative Party challenger is also credible and serious, well, then all this attention goes there. You get momentum, and overnight, who knows?
And so, Working Families, is it resolved now between them and Cuomo?
If Ozzy says it's not, then it's not.
It's not.
So, I like the sound of that.
Ozzy, you're going to be with Rangel on Tuesday night. What's the worst thing that could happen to him on Tuesday? Could he actually lose?
I mean, you never want to say you can't entirely rule anything out. A lot of people that follow national politics and congressional races say it's not possible.
Rangel won't lose. That's my opinion. He's got too many opponents.
So what's the worst thing that
can
happen?
And he's too popular.
You know, I'm going to take you up on that. If Brian Lehrer says that Ringo can't lose, I will play devil's advocate, and I will say he may not win as big. How about that? Is that brave enough?
If Ozzy Paper says Ringo may not win as big, then Ringo may not win as big.